thank you for the invitation. So, this work is done with Howard. Actually, I was named a student, but it doesn't matter. I am going to talk about unparticles, but before we get into the gist of my talk, just a preliminary statement. So unparticles is a scheme introduced by Howard and from these papers, and his goal was really just to motivate unusual collider signatures. This is the LHC age. We're really hoping to find something unusual at the LHC so that we can work hard and think a lot. And so this work really centers on distinguishing unparticle collider signatures from the standard model and beyond the standard model. Okay, and so in this talk we're going to talk about kinematic variables and cuts needed to distinguish scale invariants, and that's really what unparticles are, and dilepton missing ET signatures at the LHC. And the key point to all of this is that unparticles do not have a mass scale associated with the missing energy. All standard model interactions, all missing energy from the standard model, missing energy from SUSY, little Higgs, with T parity, everything has a mass scale associated with it. So, and that's going to be the way we're going to really make very clean signatures. And I will show you how to even see it in the smallest 10 inverse femtobarns of data. So before we get into that, a quick review of unparticles. So here's the scheme that Howard wrote about, and I would adhere to the scheme. There are other unparticle schemes written about often. John writes about them. And so at some high scale, much, much higher than TEV scale, there's some scale MU. And at this scale, we have the standard model and a theory with a non-trivial IR fixed point. And Howard calls it the bank, or it is, for example, a bank sac fields. They interact through some heavy particle of mass m. And so below the scale in u, the standard model and this non-trivial IR fixed point sector decouple. And the standard model flows all the way down to what we know today at the TEV scale. However, this other scale, the relevant couplings in these BZ fields undergo dimensional transmutation, and scale invariance emerges at the scale lambda. And so just like any wonderful effective field theorist, we will match. And we match and we find that the coupling between the standard model and this new unparticle sector is governed by operators like this. Okay, so because these fields are decoupled from the standard model and they're decoupled by this high scale M, the IR scale invariance of the M particles should not be affected. And so also because of this large M, our particles should be suppressed enough not to be seen in an experiment. And we will actually give you the most rigorous bounds, I think. I haven't found, there are 80 plus papers on unparticles out there now, and I haven't found papers that have given more stringent bounds than what I will present to you today. So, and finally, the unparticle effects in the standard model can just be thought of. You just add insertion of this effective, of this coefficient, and you have unparticles coming out of it for any standard model process. So, what is really interesting about this is that the phase space for unparticles follows this relation. So this is for n, so the phase space of n unparticles where it's an integer looks like this. And of course you can also have fractional unparticles as well. And this A of n is just some normalization that George I loves, and it works. And so the point here is that this unparticle phase space, unparticle stuff with some scale dimension of d, looks like du invisible particles. And so therefore you can now think of fancy stuff because this wonderful scale invariance of fractional particles. And so you now can think of fractional particle signatures at the LHC. Okay, so here's the plan. What we really want to do is to suggest kinematic variables and cuts to really see the scale invariance. And we're going to show how these unparticle couplings are highly suppressed. And we're only going to consider particles in the final state. And the reason why is because they're very suppressed. It's very hard to even produce them, let alone consider particles as resonances or intermediate states. So, and of course, because we consider particles in the final state, searching for them is equivalent to looking for DU massless invisible particles. And just to beat home the point again, particles do not have a mass scale associated with their missing energy. Everything else does. And this would give us a very clean signature.
Well, except that you say that it's kind of equivalent to massless invisible particles. So that is a mass scale, is it not? Statement?
So zero mass scale, yes. On particles, as you'll see in our kinematic distributions, there isn't just a peak. Hold on for a second. There is not a definitive peak that comes when you have neutrinos decay. So, for example, suppose you just have the process of Z going to two neutrinos. So, if you try to reconstruct this event, and let's say that we have another Z that goes to two leptons, so this would be Higgs, for example. Then, if you try to reconstruct the missing energy here, the missing energy automatically will have a peak at mass of the Z. Something like this. And that sets your mass scale for this particular standard model process. Mm-hmm. So for all backgrounds have a scale like this. Particles don't. And you will see that the kinematic distributions are just what you expect for scale invariance. Okay? So give me about 10 more minutes. Okay, I think I said I will consider dielectron missing energy. We don't do particles plus injets, and so it's potentially problematic. And the reason why is that if you have a 10% jet mismeasurement, so you may be obscure d is equal to 1. And so no jets, only leptons. But the particular scheme that we're actually going to do is actually we're going to have an enhancement. And so it's not a problem that this is mostly electric process. So what we're going to look at is coupling the particles to virtual photons and Zs. And this is special. Okay, so this is the particles coming out, denoted by line. Please, that line means DU particles, not just one particle. And so here is a QQ bar to virtual Z, virtual photon going to two leptons. And this diagram actually gets a bit of an enhancement, which we'll talk about. Here are the relevant operators that you would use to couple to this guy. Z mu nu is defined as just partial Z minus partial Z. Okay, so Lepton-Tevatron constraints. Then we'll go through distinguishing particles from standard model backgrounds, and then going to distinguishing particles from the MSSM. And then last thing we'll talk about is discovering particles early in the LHC run, if there's time, and conclusions will follow. Okay. So we start with bounds from the Lepton-Tevatron by looking at Z line shape. It's extremely well measured, meaning that we know exactly how many Z events there are at Lep. So this is all stuff from Aleph, muons, electrons, same shape. You can see the peak for E plus E minus to mu mu bar, jets, and to two photons. And so our plan here is just to take the background, which is just the standard model background, add our own particles, and I guess I should, as a reference, so you can always have it in the back of your mind, you. Okay, so So this is in the back of your mind. So, and then we take this particular background and we add it, and we tune the coupling to the effective operator, effective coefficient here, so that we can reproduce the line shape.
So wait, I don't understand that, because I mean that line shape differs from the, you know, sort of naive tree level line shape because of, you know, mostly I think the biggest effect is, you know, photon radiative effects and so on. You're tuning your unparticles to reproduce those effects?
Unparticles plus the standard model background. So you just
the standard model already accounts for those left line shapes, right?
Yes, but you can suppress this such that you won't get the, if you add the two cross sections.
So you're just making
so
that
I think
zero.
It really
the,
means to set limits, or are you going to?
I'm going to set limits
by not.
Okay,
so you're
just imposing that that's small on the z line shape. That's all, as a limit.
As a limit.
Okay.
There
that's
is.
That's fine. Sorry.
Okay. So just so you can see the unparticle signature signal, which is I think what you're coming after, I'm going to set this coefficient to ridiculously low 1 GeV. Okay, just so you can see the compare. And here is how the unparticles look. So this is up here is with muon final states, and here are electron final states. And this is for one. This is photon plus E. So this is 1, 2, and 3. This is 1.5, 2.5, 3.5. Right? You can do it. My code allows you to do it ad infinitum, but it's just, you know, you can stop there. The same thing here. Note that this is orders of magnitude larger than this. So this is going to be a consistent theme. And so as you can tell, you know, this is going to be a severely suppressed interaction. And let's see. And so, as you can tell, there is not a particular mass peak like this guy for these objects.
Is that top left green curve have a little bump, or is that a...
Yeah, that's because of the Z. That is right along the Z, that little kink. And so, basically, you still have a Z resonance in this in these processes. So, for example, you can consider a case where, in that case, you're right on the Z pole, and so this is E plus E minus, and you're hitting that Z, so you have a little bit of a bump that you that's in the signal.
Why is it so low?
Because
log scale.
Oh, because of the log scale also, but also because the photon diagrams dominate over the Z diagram.
I was wondering if you could just go back to the normalization page. I just want to make sure I understand what.
Okay, stop here.
Okay, so yeah, right. So that's your coefficient.
Yes.
And you did something else. I'm just trying to understand how you set it up. Oh, so you
so
chose
KS
CU lambda U over MBZ to be 1. That's just a choice, is that
that's
right?
Just a choice. That's
okay.
I did that so you could see that.
Okay, so but.
You just exaggerated the signal so you can see the shape.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And so that shape should always be in the back of your mind because everything will look like that roughly. So why is it so big? Well, basically, particles have unusual phase space. And so the diagrams with the virtual photons dominate. That makes sense. There's more phase space available. And so the particles here can force this virtual photon or this Z on shell. And so because it forces, there is a resonance here and the cross-section blows up. And this is how you get a huge enhancement in this particular signal that's beyond that you can compute with things like jets in the final state. And so this enhancement is key, and this is the enhancement is key. So for these diagrams, what's keeping the photon, for example, to go exactly on shell is twice the muon mass or twice the electron mass. And so that's why the electron mass is so much larger than the muons. So the cases where you have electron final states are much larger than the cases where you have muon final states. And of course, the cross-section scale just by dimensional analysis. And this is what you would expect for scale invariant theory. So if you, this all on the log scale looks like whatever n, 2n minus 6. So I'll just write that here. So if you have one n particle, d is equal to 1, and that gives you, or d is equal to 3, or, you know, they have this type of behavior. This is the best example of e is to 0. Okay, so here's the tuning. If I'm giving my coefficient 10 to the minus 11 for d is equal to 1 for this particular case, and this is 10 to the minus 12 GeV to the minus 2. And so for this case, 10 to the minus 11, you see you get this little excess here. And so if you pull it down another order of magnitude, then you just get the normal line shape. And so here, for all the examples I considered, here are the bounds that we're able to get. And these bounds, of course, you do it with the final state electrons because they are the ones that will give you a slightly more cross-section. And so now for everything I will do in the future, I will assume that these should be equal signs greater than equal signs. I will assume that each case has this particular value. Okay, so since we're going to be responsible, we have to make sure that we don't have any, there's no signatures for invisible Higgs. So invisible Higgs, the kinematics for our particle signature is exactly similar to the kinematics for invisible Higgs. We have gamma z Higgs. In the case of LEP, they look in the case for V plus V minus. It's easier to identify. And so the kinematics are the same, so you want to make sure that our bound holds in this particular case. This is what Delphi got, and basically this is the recall invariant mass that you can construct from the LSP. And so this is the number of events, and I think it's 50.6 I think that's 50.6 picobars, I think. I think it's on the next slide. And so here's basically what you expect from the background, and the data are these dots, the standard model background. So this is what they found. And for our different signatures, this is what we find. And so d is equal to 1 is not there because it's just a neutrino, so it's on shell, so it's going to be 0. There's no missing mass. 50.6 inverse picobarns. And so this is for green solid, blue dash. This is just d is equal to 2 and 3, and this is the fractional ones. So note that we don't have any events above 1. So we're okay there. Next place to look is at the Tevatron. And at the Tevatron, you can just ask, does our own particle signature, now that we're at a slightly higher energy scale, do we get excesses in the mu bar, that invariant mass, or the dielectron invariant mass? And note that when you get about 200 GeV, the error bars on the dimuon invariant mass are very large, and about 250, the error bars on the dielectron invariant mass are very large. And so this is what we get, the exact same number of events, the exact same picobarns, the exact same. And the only thing different is actually, I don't actually take some cuts, but if you take a cut, that actually pulls you down some more. But note that we're far below the threshold. So there, we don't have to worry about the Tevatron here. Okay, so now we're at the LHC. Okay, so what we really want to do is that we want to suggest kinematic variables and cuts, and these kinematic variables will allow us to maximize the signal-to-background ratio of our...
Could I just ask a question on constraints? I mean, I guess there must be a lot of astrophysical, very high energy processes that might emit a whole bunch of unparticle. Has this been explored?
Yeah, the first paper was Humann's paper where they looked at supernova. If you just think about the neutrinos coming from supernova, you couple them to unparticles, you can now ask the question, okay, well, will they cause the neutrinos to stream, not to free stream directly? And will they, a lot of different issues like that. And I just don't see that they produce bounds. Mostly the bounds that I see are from 10 to 5 to 10 TeV. I don't see anything much larger than that from cosmology.
So you're saying that your left bounds are really the strongest thing?
So far as I know. I mean, I actually, it was kind of difficult because there are a ton of papers on this, and, you know, people will look at B-bar mixing or things like that, and they will come up with GeV bounds and things like that, but I haven't found... D is equal to 1 is 440 TeV, the bound
from your left.
From my left bound. And it gets higher and higher as you go higher. Okay, so we want kinematic variables to maximize our signal to background ratio at the LHC. However, not all kinematic variables are the same. If we look at a cluster transverse mass variable, there is this MZ or W here. And what it does is, if no matter if you take an unparticle signature and you use that kinematic variable, you automatically get a bias, mass bias at MZ. And that makes sense. I mean, suppose this, the PTs were in the limit of 0, and suppose that this is 0, too. You know that you're going to get some bias at MZ. So the caution thing is that you should always use missing ET or something that is not mass biased, like the effective mass. And that's what we're going to do. Use in this and the following analysis. Okay, so here are the standard model backgrounds. WWZZ. WW is the nemesis because it's much larger than everything else. There's also HC, but the coupling between the Higgs is proportional to the mass of the lepton, and that's small relative to ZZ. The kinematics is exactly the same. So I'm not going to discuss it, but you can just transport the ZZ bounds, what I show you for ZZ, and just take it down a couple orders of magnitude. And when I did do the analysis, ZZ, I think, the Higgs is taken to be 350 GeV for the ZZ analysis and 120 for the HC. Okay, so here's the WW background. Here's the mass peak that we expect around the W mass, and this is just the missing energy. And let's see, it looks like I did not put in, I thought this was the ZZ effective mass, but it isn't. Let's see if I have it on the next slide. Oh, good. Okay, good. So here is the missing ET for WW and this WW. Note the very large mass peak. I don't know why
this
I have.
Cross section or events? Or
yes, this is d sigma d det, and I did not put that there either.
And that's Gunther Barnes or
Pico Barnes.
Pico Barnes.
And this is the effective mass here. Note that there is a mass peak here, although I have no idea why it's on this page. But
so, what's the difference between the left and the right again?
The left and right, I just blew this up so you can see like more of a mass.
This is the same line.
Yes.
Okay.
So you can see the mass peak. Interesting. I think I just mislabeled this, and this is WW. Sorry about that. So here's the same thing for ZZ and ZZ missing ET. Here is the mass peaks, and it's blown up again. Okay. So here's the unparticle signature at the LHC. So of course, this is for that unusually small, right, oh, no. This is for, I'm sorry, d is equal to 1, 2, and 3, 1.5, 2.5, 3.5. And this is for the So this is for a smaller mass range here, and this is for a larger mass range, so you can see more of the scale invariant nature. And this is for only electron final states. The muons look exactly the same, they're just a few orders of magnitude.
So are these curves also for that one GeV nominal?
No, this is actually for the bounds that
this,
are there.
Okay, so this is for the bound.
So this is the missing ET, and this is the, missing ET, but note that the scale is 10 to the 2, 10 to the minus 6, and WW, so it's the nemesis, and it's much, much, much larger. Okay. And this is the same thing, but for the effective mass.
So what is the bottom solid line there?
The bottom solid line here?
Yeah.
This is D is equal to 1.
That's 1. Okay.
The problem here is that it takes a lot of computing time to actually produce these curves because you're basically populating all of phase space. So this actually takes like a week to generate. And, you know, I still haven't gotten the to make it pretty enough. But okay, so we want to clean up the signal. So this is how we're going to do it. Let's look at cosine theta and delta dilepton delta r. So as you guys all know, the delta r is defined as d eta squared plus d pi squared. Okay? And so basically it's the cone that the two leptons pull out in the transverse space. And so for the WW background, here's cosine theta and here's delta r. So, and that makes sense because, you know, the W's are produced basically in the center detector region mostly, and the leptons decay and they don't really have a preferential direction. And the same thing for the ZZ. It's slightly different. They're, the as you would expect, because the missing energy or the leptons come from a single Z, the angle would be smaller. But for the particle signature, we don't have that, actually. For cosine theta, we have a very well-defined peak close to 1, and delta r, and this is an older plot. This, whatever this anomaly is, went away. And more recent things I did this morning. And so what's the reason for this? Well, here, the photon and the Z, they're very, very highly boosted. And this angle is very, very, very small. And so this is this also will help us to clear up the WW. So actually, maybe I should go on. Questions on this?
So I'm just trying to understand this highly boosted. It's just because most of the unparticles are coming out with high energy. That's what I'm confused.
Well,
you say the unparticles want to make use of the large phase space, so that would suggest they would come out with substantial energy. Is that intuition wrong?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand. You're asking me.
Well, I'm just trying to understand why the Z or a photon is highly boosted. I thought maybe the unparticles would want to take away a lot of energy and maybe not boost the photon and Z so much. So just trying to get a better intuitive feel here.
Yeah, so the photon and Z are still boosted. You can say that in a limit that the unparticles take all the energy that the leptons are basically going to be produced at rest. And so in that case, the leptons never ever reach the detector. However, they still have, and from what we can observe, in the case where we don't actually, these guys are still very much boosted forward.
Is it just that everything is boosted because there's no heavy
particle
state, I think? Is that all? I mean, because Jack is asking, you know, who takes more of the energy, the unparticles or the photon? Are you just saying they're more or less roughly equally distributed, but everything is high energy because
everything is
there's no heavy mass?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That could be the answer. I'm just trying to
is that right? That's the answer?
Okay. So if you, so what you can do is that you can take a cut, delta R, and I did not write it down. So delta R, we're going to take, I thought I did. So we're going to take the cut of delta R is going to be less than 0.4.
Sorry, can you just show the delta R distribution again? Can you just go back one slide?
Yes.
This one was, that's the delta R.
These are delta R's for the ion particles.
And you said that that second pump is actually not really there. That was some...
Yeah, that was just in there.
It actually looks like it's just a peak at zero.
Yeah, it tails off slowly like this.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so for WW, the effect of this cut makes sense. So the Ws are produced, and then they decay lepton here and lepton there. So there's going to be a large angle between the two leptons. And so basically for this cut, basically you're considering the events where you have Ws produced on shell. And then because they're produced on shell, then they subsequently decay to leptons, and the leptons somehow evade this cut. And so for the ZZ, you also, the Z, so you have a Z decaying to two leptons and a Z decaying to two neutrinos. And so basically, this cut takes away some of the low, this whole mass peak that was here beforehand. And so it reduces this mass peak, but for this, because the kinematics are zero for the ZZ, it eliminates this this invariant mass here, this mass peak that we talked about at the beginning.
Actually, this is a question I have. It sounds to me like, this is sort of related to Jack's question, it sounds to me like this cut is effectively a high-energy cut.
It is.
So, I mean, it somehow would have been more conventional, maybe it's more conventional sounding to just, you know, background, standard model backgrounds like WW production are going to fall off very rapidly at high energy. So if you did some sort of high energy cut, I would guess that you could accomplish the same kind of thing.
So it's
exactly. Because the up particles, right, they don't fall off as fast, or they don't fall off at all with energy because of this weird phase space. Is that... Right.
That's right. So I could have completely said I will eliminate the W mass peak and I'll eliminate the Z mass peak, and then this is what you get. It's equivalent to that type of cut.
Would it be equivalent to just a missing energy cut demanding more than a certain amount of missing energy?
What I'm saying, I think we're saying the same thing, but let's go back. It's equivalent to saying that I'm going to lop off this.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, is there any reason why you chose this particular cut rather than a missing energy cut? It looks, to someone not, you know, involved in the details, it looks like you could accomplish the same thing.
I will claim that when I talk about the scale, looking at on particles early, and this particular cut may be more useful. And the reason why is because, just to give you a preview, at the LHC, when it turns on, they're going to measure certain things. And one of the things they're going to do is measure the Z-pole. When they measure the Z-pole, that's going to be at below about 200 GeV variant mass or less. And so the point is that you want to look for missing energy in that particular range. And so, of course, you also have to get rid of backgrounds, all these particular backgrounds that may contribute to mismeasurement. And so this particular cut's a little bit better than just lopping off.
So the events that are, the low energy events that are kept are still useful if you're looking at the Z, for example, that's with this cut.
I was trying to be more universal, yes.
But that's okay, I understand.
Okay. Okay, so I think we are here. So here's the cut. We're going to apply the standard detector cuts. When you apply this cut and this cut, the WW background goes completely away. Why? Because you restrict this restriction to the central detector region. And here are the smearing parameters, which I should always give just to be consistent. So here is the signal for DSU is equal to 1 and DSU is equal to 1.5 plus the remaining background. And this is in plus or minus missing ET. So this is the effective background, effective mass. And here is for 2, 2.5. Here is 3 and 3.5.
Let's see, I'm trying to, what would it look like without the signal component?
Without the signal component?
I
think you'll just get something, superposition of these guys with that cut.
Can't keep track of the scale, so are those graphs mainly dominated by the signal, the ones later on?
So this is, ZZ is basically eliminated, it's minus 11, this is
okay.
8, I think, and this is minus 1, minus 7, so let's look at the signal, so here, it's mostly dominated by these guys. By the signal.
So this is a. Okay, so you had the two backgrounds. You had the W. Can you go back to the background?
Yeah, I think I do a comparison somewhere in here. I put them side by side, but let's go back.
Okay, so you have the WW. So you're combining these two plots, basically.
Yes.
And then the effective mass, okay, so I'm just going to have to try to read the scales here. We have 10 to the minus 2.
Well, I think you can pretty much forget about the second one. Because
it's
the first one is just
dropping to 10 to the minus 7 at 700. Okay, so now go forward.
Okay, 10 to the minus 2.
2, dropping to 10 to the minus 7. Yeah, so above about 700, or 500 even, then the signal is dominating. Below 500, the background could be dominant. So, okay.
Yeah.
So
also,
so now this the vertical axis is what d sigma d m in units of what?
Picobarns divided by GeV.
Okay. So we're talking about a signal of 10 to the minus 3 picobarns per GeV over a window of, let's say, 500 GeV or something like that. So we're talking about
You're trying to figure out.
Yeah, just trying to get the cross section for the signal above background. So I think
if I understand,
it's something like 1 picobar.
So how about that? So this is for muons. I never showed you, I only show you electrons in the final state. Here are the electrons.
Okay, good. Something of order of picobar, that's what I was getting.
Okay. Okay. All right, so muons are smaller.
But this is integrated over a large...
This is for...
Over a large range of energy, or... What?
You mean
total
what?
Total cross section
is integrated over everything that I could get that it hits my little smear detector.
Okay, but that's not what's relevant for this. You know, I thought you were gonna tell us if they are looking for the Z pole at LHC.
Next.
Okay,
that's next.
This is what.
Actually, second to last. So this is for Tinnenberg of DeBrunt. Yes.
Also, the background coming from WW, here it says zero, but basically it has been cut away from the other cuts you applied, not by this cut on delta R.
So the WW, if you say that you want, so WW naively wants a large angle in order to stay in the central detector region.
Well, from the plot you showed, the cross section is of order 10 to minus, above 10 to minus 3, for very low numeric mass.
Yes, but I also put in the detector cut. And
that will kill.
That will kill the rest
background.
Of it. Okay. So the point is, in the central detector region, let's just say that we're restricting to eta rapidity of less than 2.5, then we naively expect that the leptons, they really want a large angle between them. And so now I've just now required that I have not only confined things to the central region, but now I say that I want a small angle as well. And so that eliminates your WW.
So those previous plots did not have any detector cuts, so called,
no.
For the back there. So.
No. Okay, so we can now think about distinguishing this from other scenarios, and of course, other scenarios is defined by Susie. And so now we can look at slepton decays. So just like the standard model, the missing energy there has a mass scale associated with it. That mass scale is neutralino mass. And so what is important about slepton decays are looking for missing energy, regardless in the MSSM or little pH or T parity, et cetera. The mass difference between the parent parity odd particle and the LSP is the most important kinematic parameter. And is there a research? So here's slepton decay. Okay, so let's say this is the neutralinos. Neutralinos, these are sleptons. Okay, so, these are leptons. And so the point is that if the mass difference between these guys is really, really, really small, then, well, let's take the case where the mass difference is really, really large. This is a very light neutralino. So let's say that this is 500 and this is really small, it's 140, 150. Then this lepton has a lot of phase space to work with. And you, if you plot the effective match, you get a general understanding of the neutralino mass scale. And so here we consider 150 GeV neutralino mass. And so you get just a very rough estimate. No one can really say, because it's missing energy, what is the mass scale of the neutralino. But if you just plot the effective mass, it's well known that you get some estimate of the mass scale. And so one is for 150. And this is the missing energy, and this is the effective mass for 150 GeV neutralino mass. And note cosine theta, it's just flat. This is for 450 neutralino mass. And here, note that you just don't get the correct mass scale or rough approximation of the right mass scale when this lepton has very little phase space associated with it. Of course, still, your cosine theta is very, very, very flat. And so what you can do is apply this cut. And just like I did before, in the case where you have large mass difference between the neutralino and the slepton and small mass difference, here is the result just from the cut, no detector cuts. Okay, and note that the rate is noticeably down.
So I thought for these values of sleptons, there's almost no cross-section for direct production in LHC. So are you assuming that these are produced in cascades, or?
No, I was just.
You're just looking at the shape without worrying. I mean, there's no.
I wasn't worried about.
So this is not really a back. I mean, there's no signal for this. The actual rate, I don't think is.
Okay. Well, I mean.
Significant at LHC for this.
If you have, let's say that 100 diffraction intervals, so that means that 10^3, 10^5. In this particular case, so 10^5, maybe you'll get, as you were saying, maybe 10 events, I don't know.
How did you generate these events, I guess is the question. Did you use one of the standard programs or write your own code or what?
I had to write my own code because on particles, you have to reweight phase space.
No, I'm talking about the backgrounds here.
Oh, I compared this with Sherpa. I wrote my own code and also compared it with Sherpa.
So this is Sherpa for what, some standard set of?
No, this is my code, but I want to make sure that the cross sections were the same.
Okay, but when you compared to Sherpa, what did you compare to? Just
my
direct,
my code to the...
No, but I mean, what processes did you put into Sherpa? You have to specify what is generated.
Just this process.
Okay, so direct lepton pair production, that was Marcus' question.
Right.
So it will be just a very small cross-section. There's no cascade decays, which would greatly enhance it. Yeah, okay.
Okay. All right. My point here is that my point is that these distributions look very different, and the signatures at the LHC, you know, the amount of cross section that you get is much different. So and that conclusion remains the same. So now we can think about how can we see in particles early at the LHC. And so this is what I was telling you about earlier. There, one thing that experimentalists are going to do is look at Z-line shape as a benchmark. And the signal, the unparticle signature grows like power of E, and here, the cross-section. LEP is already ruled out in invisible Higgs at less than 200 invariant mass for the dileptons, the dileptone invariant mass. So it's likely that it's unlikely that if you find missing energy signature, it's unlikely that you'll see it for something about 100 GeV or so. So what I'm doing is just looking for missing energy in this particular range. And here it is. This is for electrons in the final state. And for d is equal to 1, 2, and 3, this is 1.5, 2.5, 3.5. So just look for reconstruct, look for missing energy when you reconstruct the dileptons.
These are reconstructed Zs?
This is...
What is
missing ET for invariant masses less than 200 GeV.
This is the total signal cross-section.
Well, because you have your missing ET requirement, then your standard model background goes away. Not this signal, but just... QQ bar to L plus L minus. You have two leptons produced. Now you look for missing ET. That totally eliminates your L plus L minus background.
Well, I mean,
you can have
there's
mismeasurement.
Z production where the one Z decays the neutrinos and the other Z to leptons. Maybe small, you know, but.
But for that Z, we put in the same cuts as we did for the previous case.
Mm-hmm.
Where we basically eliminate the ZZ background in that way.
Okay, so you're not requiring that the leptons that you see have mass anywhere near the Z, you're just integrating over all possible lepton invariant masses?
I don't understand.
You're looking at lepton plus missing energy, right?
Yes.
Is there any constraint on the lepton invariant mass in the end?
I'm only focusing on signatures, dileptone invariant masses that are less than 200 GeV.
Okay, so you're integrating up to 200 GeV.
Just another question about this plot. These are with these values of the dimension are the ones that saturate the left bounds?
Yes.
So I just don't understand why you're getting such a huge signal. I think there's some kinematic thing I'm not understanding because naively I would say, well, look, you're just producing a Z and bramming stuff off the Z. If anything, you know, and LEP didn't see any events, but here you go and saturating the LEP bounds, you're seeing just, you know, thousands of events with 10 inverse femtobars. Everything is electroweak. I'm just sort of puzzled by the fact that you're getting so many events.
Well, I will say that it's a combination of two things. You have an effective operator, so therefore, just like Fermi theory, the amplitude grows like powers of E. Also, the other thing that's really important is that you keep hitting this resonance here, which gives you this amplitude.
So somehow the overall energy scale is enhancing this process, even though you're in the end, you're looking at some event that reconstructs to say an on-shell Z.
I'm sorry.
You still get
this.
Well, I thought that this was. Maybe I'm even more confused. But I thought that this was.
So theoretically, you can have, for example, there. So this can if you're supposed to, your QQ bar is very, very, very energetic. Your particles take off some massive energy, even though normally this event, if you're able to reconstruct everything, will be in the high invariant mass region, let's say somewhere over here. But now, because the particles take off so much energy, then now you have this dielectric time, when you measure it, actually is below 200, for example. And so you have tons of events that are like that, that are presumably way out here. So now they are, when you just look at the dielectric times, they are.
I must say I have a similar sort of misgiving. And, you know, normally I would say, okay, yes, so you have a phase space that allows your unparticles to take advantage of large energies. But on the other hand, the parton distribution functions, you know, don't like to have large subprocess energies. They, you know, in general, when you do a normal process, things are made sort of near threshold. You know, you don't get that much extra collision energy out of your partons. So somehow this unparticle effect, the phase space effect, is overwhelming the usual parton distribution gain, and it kind of doesn't favor high net energies for the final state. Is that what's going on in some sense?
I agree with you in the fact that so most of the time when you're producing like a heavy resonance, you are getting QQ bar initial states. And I agree with you in the fact that you have these QQ bar initial states. And normally for things that are off shell, you can expect just roughly that 10% of the events of the LHC will give you QQ bar initial partons. But this enhancement, I claim, is only for when you're hitting this, a large number of the cross-section counts when you have this large enhancement from gamma and Z. And I will say that just under, if I go back to the Tevatron constraints, you know, the cross-section is really growing rapidly, and it's right under the bounds that we had for the Tevatron for in terms of the dimuon excesses and the electron excesses. So the cross-section is growing rapidly. I expected you guys to ask me questions about unitarity, but that's a different beast.
Well, I would also kind of, I think I feel a little bit like Jack, and I mean, let me just say that if you look at your solid line, that's just D equals 1. So that's just the phase space, the same as the phase space of a single particle. So that's literally a model where you're producing, you have some massless particle that the Z can brem off. And you've set up the left bounds so that thing is, you know, there aren't enough events, this thing is not produced at left. And then you're saying that, with ten inverse femtobarns, you're making a gazillion events, I mean, right? Because that's events per GeV. So you've got, you know, so even with one inverse femtobarn, you'd have hundreds of events, even just at, you know, fairly low missing ET. So,
well,
and then it doesn't seem to drop off. So I'm also a little, so now I've got a lot less experience than Jack or other people in this room, but also it just looks kind of weird that cross section is so big and not falling off.
I'm uneasy, let's put it that way, knowing what I know, given my past experience. But anyway, but you're telling me that, so let's come back to Marcus's case. I mean, suppose that were some thing that was bremming off there. I don't know what it's appropriate to think of it as a spin zero.
Yeah.
Invisible something or other, okay? But with a very weak coupling, and basic coupling is very weak because your mass scale is high.
Otherwise you would have seen it.
Otherwise you would have...
Right.
But the vertex has P squared in it.
That's right.
It has a Q squared?
P squared.
Why?
It's got that scalar couples to...
Oh, because it couples to F U nu squared.
Yeah.
Okay, so then the coupling is growing with energy. I see. So it's the left bounds were basically satisfied by making that energy scale high. And so then, I see. And so since you instructed us to ask you about it, what unitarity is all okay? I mean, this is none of these events here, underlying events, are have the cross section larger than unitarity limit.
So unitarity for particles is a, I guess, kind of a tricky beast.
Well, just for D equals 1, then it's not tricky, right?
Well, if it's got this
because
vertex behavior, it could be tricky.
And also,
no, it's not tricky. I mean, it grows with energy, and at some energy scale,
yeah,
it violates unitarity.
So, that,
so I want to
so
know if
for D is equal to 1, the cutoff or the coefficient is 440 TeV. So in my mind,
it should be okay.
It should be okay.
This 440 TeV is lambda. What do you call lambda U?
It is that whole coefficient. So lambda could be...
Right, but there are two mass scales there, mu and lambda U.
That's right. So, and also you have this blank, the contribution.
But for D equals
1,
I can just... If he's giving you the overall scale of the coefficient, at least for D equals 1, it would just be like a higher dimension operator with a massless particle coupled at that scale. So at least for that case...
Assuming these two scales are the same. There's only one scale.
Well, that scale is a combination of these other two scales, but phenomenologically, you're only sensitive to that combination, right?
Yeah, I know, but
right.
What I also was worrying about is that actually, the scale lambda u is where you actually, when you get to this scale, you don't see unparticles anymore. So you start seeing something more complicated. The scale,
yes. Okay.
The pieces, but
right in a decoupled sector.
The scale is high enough, so you never get to that point.
So mu is very, very, yes. So,
so if you make a mu bigger, then this lambda u becomes bigger as well.
Well, what I've given you here is just...
So my question really is, the number you gave me, this 440 TeV, is when mu is equal to lambda u.
No, it's the whole it's the whole coefficient. There it is. So it's the whole thing. Or D is equal to 1, for example. Whatever this thing is. So for example, mu to B conceivably, you can, so this is that M that you're talking about.
Yes, yes.
And you can get extraordinary, so lambda to B. I bounded the whole thing.
Okay. So you write that coefficient as a mass scale to the power, whatever it is.
Yes, D,
minus
2.
D.
Yes, okay. Okay, I think that I think that's everything. So, and this is just a review. Distinguish on particle signatures. No mass scale for particles. Everything else has a mass scale. We gave you kinematic variables and cuts. You can think of them as cuts on these different missing energy mass peaks, that it's totally fine. We can show, potentially, you can see it with tin inversion to bars of data and put stringent bounds. And I think that's everything I want to say. Yes. Yes, sir.
I had a question that but I think John's comment might have answered it. In the case of massless photons, the biggest physical effects are for soft emissions. Now, I think you weren't looking at that kinematic region. And I was going to ask whether there would be similar large effects from soft emissions, but then took your comment to be basically no because they're general because they're derivative couplings. And I think that did flash by in one of your early slides. So why are you looking at derivative couplings only, if that's correct in fact?
Well, they're not totally derivative couplings, but yes, really, mostly derivative couplings. There is I can make this clear with this slide. So this has MZ, but yeah, everything is basically a derivative. So this is just a mass of Z. You can have this particular coupling, but this is just d mu Z, d mu Z. D mu Z minus d mu Z.
Okay, so then my question is, where do these forms of coupling come from, and are you restricted? restricted to just those forms?
No, you can have whatever you want. The reason why, if you're asking why did we choose this?
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so it's because lab bounds are very, very tight for the number of Z's that are produced. And so I wanted, when I was first thinking about this was, okay, how tight can we make the lab bounds? And the second thing is that I knew that I was going to get a bit of enhancement because of this additional gauge boson here. And also the other thing is that if you want to put the tightest bounds possible, for LEP, you really want your particles to be sensitive to the standard mass energy for E plus E minus.
So, I mean, I think the basic point is that he's assuming that the unparticles are not charged under any of the standard model gauge group. And in that case, these are just the lowest dimension operators that you can write down. So these are the leading operators in some low energy expansion.
Certainly that's true as well.
I'm still trying to get an intuitive feel here. So, okay, I take the derivative couplings. So the coupling goes like E squared. I guess the cross-section goes like E to the fourth. The LHC versus Tevatron energies is a factor of 7. So if I ignore the parton distribution functions, I could get a factor of 7 to the fourth or something like that, or 2,500. Parton distribution functions might bring this down to a factor of 1,000. It seems to me that the effect is still bigger than I was expecting.
Well, maybe we can, should we break for lunch? We can have some more discussion about this. Okay, let's thank Devin.
So you would argue that it is like two orders of magnitude less.
Well, I don't know how much you got relative to my expectation. I would say you might get a factor of 1,000 larger cross section of the LHC. But then the other things also go up, but maybe your cuts have eliminated them. It's very hard to keep track, so I'm not used to